Hello there, and welcome to the Spread Nesson's Football Picks Podcast. I'm Nesson.com's Mike Cole, joined as always by Ricky Doyle. Ricky, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Not bad. We'll be joined at some point today, I assume, by Nesson betting analyst Sam Panayotovich. But we'll cross that bridge when we get there. As always, what's up?
Last week, he's taking phone calls before he comes on. Now he's coming in a little late.
Pretty big league.
It really speaks to where we are in his personal power rankings.
Yeah, and I you know, it's the playoffs for a betting man like himself. It's a busy time, I imagine. You know, it's not dissimilar from like the postal service at Christmas time.
Yeah, so, you know, he's got his priorities, and clearly, you and I are down the pecking order. But here we are.
Yeah, if for some reason you're unfamiliar with the format here, we'll make our against the spread picks for the football games this week, and you know. Usually we do the three best games of the week, but there's only four games this week. We are getting down to the nitty gritty. We're in the divisional round.
We should have picked three of the four.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good
cutting room floor.
Then we'll just fight over the other one for like a lock and an upset. I mean, it's a very obvious talking point. It's one that's been mentioned many, many times. Everybody, it's like a cliche at this point. This is, in my opinion, the best week of the football year. I will hear arguments for championship weekend. I could get behind that. But you've got two games each day, and I think if anything, wild card weekend, a super wild card weekend, was just a necessary weeding out. I don't know if it's necessary to play that many games, but the garbage of the garbage are gone.
Yeah. No, I was gonna ask you that, what your general feel for this past weekend was, because by and large it was the games left a lot to be desired.
We got rid of the worst teams, though. And, like, so there was there was no fluky scenario in which, like, it didn't snow in Buffalo or something to the point where the Patriots got through. You know, I guess the only other game, Pittsburgh, it looked for a little bit there that it was going to be close, and then it just turned into a smoke show. And then, like, the Cardinals clearly didn't belong here either. So to get rid of those three teams is, you know, see you later. The Cowboys are a bit of a mess too. Overall, though, I thought the games were fine. It was better than not watching playoff football. But by Monday, let me answer your question with a question, or turn it around on you. What about Monday Night Football? What did you think of that?
It did nothing for me.
So it felt like a regular Monday Night Football game to me.
And by the time.
And then so
by the time it rolled around,
bingo.
Like I had almost felt like the weekend had already been over. And
exactly.
Maybe it was because of the game too. Like I didn't, that game in particular, like it was like, all right, whichever one of these teams wins, they're going to go to Tampa. Like there just wasn't a lot to figure out.
Generally speaking too, that's my feel on Monday Night Football. And that's kind of, this is a much bigger conversation. Monday Night Football means nothing anymore. Just in the grand scheme of things. I don't love the broadcast. The Manning thing is a nice touch. I watched the Mannings talk to The Rock for 45 minutes last night, which was the highlight of the entire broadcast. But like the graphics do nothing for me. The games aren't usually that good. Like there's that big game feel isn't there.
There's a feel to it.
And so like that's
lack
kind
of feel.
And that translated into this, where that game just had no feel. Because I think we all kind of realized pretty quickly this is no contest. And B, it's just, I don't know, it's Monday Night Football. It is, it's kind of, which is sad considering
it wasn't a scenario where if such and such wins, then they're going to this place and that, you know, affects another match. Like it was just straight up, like whoever wins this game is going to Tampa Bay. And I think the Rams are a much better team than the Cardinals as we saw on Monday night. So I almost was just like, I don't even really want to watch this game. Like I will have it on in the background, but. It wasn't must-see TV for me.
Other than that, I don't know. I enjoyed watching the
most of the games sucked.
I enjoyed watching the Patriots because their heads kicked in. Like that was a fun little other than that, it's.
I mean, even the one game that was, even the games that were relatively close weren't that close. Like I know there's a lot, obviously, on the whole final drive and the final play of that Cowboys Niners game, but like. It still would have been a miracle if they had pulled that off. And, you know, the Bengals-Raiders game was pretty close, but was it really? Like, the Raiders
were always...
Well,
the Raiders was the one I forgot about, too. Like, they didn't belong here either.
Yeah, and like, they were, like, kind of within striking distance, but, like, they'd be down by one score, but you'd look up and the Bengals were at the 10-yard line or something. And I don't know. It's just... A lot of the games played out the way that we anticipated them playing out. So I thought we had a pretty good read of the board. But
it's a good point.
From an entertainment value standpoint, it just didn't really do it for me.
Yeah, I've just gotten word that Sam will be joining us very shortly. So, but we this is,
shot
I guess, is a good
Royal
time for
Rumble
us to brag is that we want to combine the, I can't do the math in my head, 9-3 last week. You went 5-1. I went 4-2. Nice job by us. This is actually something maybe we can get into with Sam. The more I pay attention to this stuff, the more, like, I don't know. Here is Sam. Like, the sharp thing is starting to annoy me. Sam, defend your people.
The people that have been trying to take down Joe Burrow for those people?
Like, it's...
Like me?
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, so I guess this is the question. Like, this time of year, Sam Panayotovich, Nesson betting analyst, is now in the this freezing cold room with us.
Yeah, it is cold.
Yeah.
Your microphone seems to be all right too. We had a little echo in here a little while ago. I think we rectified that
situation.
We
figured it out. Sam, this idea of the sharps versus the squares, et cetera, does that kind of get eliminated when there's four games and then the lines are going to be as sharp as possible? So how does that change in terms of smarter?
Might as well flip
betters?
A coin, right?
Yeah.
You have to remember that the NFL playoffs have the tightest lines of the season. These are the hardest numbers to beat because there are only a handful of games left. The money comes in on both sides, and then there's way more public action than there is sharp action. So if I'm a bookmaker and I write a $25,000 bet, say Ricky comes in and bets 25 large on Team A, I'm still going to probably write more public bets on Team B. So in the regular season, when there's 16 games and Ricky wants to bet $25,000 on Jacksonville, that's going to move the number. But, you know, in a game between the Rams and the Buccaneers, you're going to get good public play on both sides. And at this point, it looks like the public will be on the Rams. But to your point about sharps against squares, the sample size is so small that the public can have big weekends and big postseasons. I mean, think about all the plays. The Bucs and Chiefs were layups.
Yeah.
And those were public size. The Bengals were a favorite. The Bills were a favorite. The Rams were a favorite. And the Niners were the public dog. The public killed the house this weekend.
Perfect example of something that I looked at and was like, what the hell am I missing? And are people just trying to be too smart? Where is the edge here? What was I missing about the Philly-Tampa game where I woke up Sunday morning and it's down to 7 from 8.5 or whatever, and it felt like the Eagles were getting steamed Sunday morning?
You know what happened? Billy Walters' group bet Philly.
Yeah.
That's all that happened. And when Billy bets... Billy's peons bet, and then all of a sudden everybody gets Billy's bet.
What are we doing here?
That's literally what happened, though.
No, I know, but
I called the guy in Vegas. I called Murray at the Westgate, and I'm like, why are you guys at 7 on this game? And he said, well, we were at 8.5, and then we took 6 figures, like bang, 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 on the Eagles and moved to 7.5, and then everybody chased it and got it to 7.
I love, like, the thing, the idea of people just being like, well, hell, this guy – I don't care. Like, imagine, like, being – I'm sure there was people who looked at it.
Blind faith in you.
Yeah, and just, like, there's no chance that the Eagles are within this number. And then all of a sudden, so-and-so puts, you know, 6 figures on it, and all of a sudden you're going to change what you're – you know, that seems like a recipe to go broke.
You guys had a better weekend than I had. I had the Raiders plus 6, which I would argue still had every opportunity
to win.
Yeah. I mean, like – when they kicked the field goal down 10, I almost threw the TV off my balcony because that is the most infuriating thing. You need a touchdown anyways, and you're inside the 10, and you're like, well, I'll just kick the field goal, and we'll get the onside kick, or we'll play defense or whatever. And then they had the chance to get in again in the very last drive. That didn't happen. Had the under in the first half in that game, which went over on that final play, and then had Dallas just completely – shot themselves in the foot. What, 15 penalties, 7 pre-snappers. I mean, San Francisco wasn't great. Dallas just sucked. And then the only play that I won was the anti-sharp side. The sharps took Arizona. They took 4, 3.5. That game closed 3. And I thought, well, I'm going to lose again because the wise guys are, you know, going to get one finally. And they didn't. I mean, the wise guys got pounded. They had the Eagles. They had the Steelers. They had the Patriots. They had the Raiders. And they had the Cardinals. I don't think the Sharps won any games this week. And I think the narrative going into that Bucs game, to answer your question from 8 minutes ago before I started rambling, was that people were like, well, Brady doesn't have Godwin or AB. Well, Brady's still Brady. Brady makes his receivers, and he still has Gronkowski and a decent offensive line and a Super Bowl-winning defense.
And this is why I think go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I feel like we've kind of come full circle on our argument from the, you know, week one or week two, where, like, we had asked, so does anything that happens on the field actually matter?
This is what I was getting to, yeah.
Because it seems like a lot of that was just predicated on loving the number. Like, in that Steelers game, for instance, like, whatever that got up to was 12.5, 13, something like that.
Every time it touched 13, it went back to 12.5.
So that is just, like, falling in love with the number, right? Because if you were to look at that game from an on-field standpoint, I couldn't find any reason to think that the Steelers were going to stick around in that game.
And you know what's funny? Like, we over-examine these games so much. I had a guy tell me about 5 years ago. He's a very respected bookmaker in Vegas. He's like, honestly, Sam, the better quarterback usually wins in the playoffs. And he's like, but that is so novice and so elementary for the complex thinker and the big brain. Like, well, yeah, of course you could pick the better quarterback, but that seems too easy. I mean, Brady, Mahomes, Burrow, Allen, Stafford, Garoppolo over Dak, and Dak has never won a big game. So you can make the case that the better quarterback won pretty much every game.
That is a good simplification, though. Like, and it's a kind of important to remember to be on when you're on the other side, which I feel like I am probably too much looking at the straight football aspect of it, where it's like, I mean, yeah, I looked at that. The Philly game was the game I felt most comfortable about last week. Because,
you laid it with Tampa.
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
I was like, Philly's terrible against tight ends. That's all that Brady has left to throw to, and Gronk didn't even have a huge game. Philly wants to run the ball. Like, Tampa's got a pretty good run defense. But, like, what if they break 260-yard runs and, like, all of a sudden they're within the number? So it's not, you know, there's just no good way of going about this.
That defense looks like they're willing to win another Super Bowl. I mean, I saw a couple times the offensive line trying to block Vita Vea, who's as big as, like, three refrigerators stacked up next to each other. I mean, like, they couldn't get past him. And he's one guy. I mean, look, I'm not going to say the Bucs didn't care during the regular season, but they were not giving you max effort. This is when that defense is going to come to play. And still, you can lay if you want. You can go to WinBet. You can go to FanDuel. You can lay 2.5 with Tampa against the Rams right now if you want. And I just don't know how I don't make that wager.
That one I'm kind of, yeah.
Come on.
No, I know. Yeah, I get the point. Yeah, that's maybe. Yeah.
And coming off a Monday night game, you have a less day of rest. Everybody watched it. Oh, my God, Stafford and McVay. You know, like, it's never going to end. And the Buccaneers, historically, with Brady, are going to win this game by a touchdown 8 times out of 10. Probably.
One of my thoughts coming out of that game, though, or coming out of last weekend, was I can't wait to bet against the Bucs, which is famous last words, because I think the defense, the secondary is a joke, and, like, Philly couldn't take advantage of that. But, like, all of a sudden, now I'm just like, I don't really know if I want to do that on second thought because it's Tom Brady. So speaking of, like, the quarterback thing, I get the one game I do want to talk about this week is the Niners-Packers game.
Have you heard what's going on with Jimmy?
He's got a bum shoulder.
It's looking like he's not going to play. Like, not going to start, and that's the rumor.
So I'm glad that we started this before we got in our picks. Because Shanahan, we're just going to go, like, way over our time here. But Shanahan coming out on a Monday and be like, the starting quarterback has a shoulder injury. It's minor. Should send up all sorts of red flags. Because, like, if it's minor, why would he even say anything about it? So that would make sense that he might not play. What else?
Well, the conversation going on now, and it's been leaked a little bit on Twitter, how Jimmy's having a hard time throwing the football, and that it's not looking good that he's going to be able to play on Saturday. Remember, it's a short turnaround, right, too. So if he took a shot late in that game, third, fourth quarter, you know, we don't know that until we get to Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. The conversation going on right now, seeing that this number has been blasted to 6 everywhere. So now it's Green Bay 6, and again, that's not with any officialness to this. They have not said that Jimmy's out. This is what happens when you have injury speculation before it turns into confirmation. The line's going to go from 5 to 5.5 to 6. And it's going to hang here until we get the report that he's doubtful, and then eventually maybe he's out. At that point, where does this number go when you go from Garoppolo to a rookie starting in the elements at Lambeau. It's got to go to 9 or 10, right? So if you like the Packers and you believe in the rumors that either Jimmy's not healthy or not going to play, you literally have to bet 6 right now. You have to. Because if you wait until kickoff and on Sunday the ticker or Saturday the ticker says Jimmy's out, the line's going to be 9.5 or 10. And you're literally getting through the 7. We don't know for sure, but I mean, I've been on the phone for the last hour trying to figure out what he's like, talking to reporters. They're like, yeah, he can't throw the ball. That's not good.
I just bet the 6.
Good so. Bet.
But, like, I could still see them winning that game.
It'll be interesting, too, to see what's up with Bosa and Warner. I think those two could be even more important.
The bigger impact than Jimmy, because I think, especially, it's not like, I mean, it's not a lot of time, but to have a full week of practice for Lance is better than Jimmy falling and hurting himself on Thursday, obviously.
But, Ricky, what's that line? Like, right now, we don't know that anybody's out. If it's 6 now, what is that line if Jimmy Garoppolo and Bosa and Warner are all out?
8.5.
If not higher, because then everybody's going to lay it. Like, now, you like at that point, if you're behind the counter and you're taking bets, you don't want to write any more Packer bets. They're still going to lay 8.5. They're still going to lay 9 because it's under 10. Like, I would imagine if those three guys are out, and we'll know by Thursday or Friday because the game's on Saturday, 10 is probably realistic. And then what'll happen, Mike? The wise guys will come in and they'll take 10.
But, I mean, having a 6 in my pocket, I wouldn't be.
You could middle it on a touchdown.
I would not be
7,
opposed to sneaking back up if it were at 10. Cause
yeah. So say you bet $100 on minus 6, then you could bet $50 on plus 10, and you win 150 if it lands 7 or 8, which is very realistic.
Well, that was going to be my follow-up to you, is if it gets up to 10, where do you sit on that? Because that goes back to, I think, the discussion of, is the number too good? Is that, like, supersede whatever you might potentially see on the field from a rookie quarterback going into Lambeau, like you said?
In a regular season tilt, I'd probably be more excited to take 10. But in the playoffs, I mean, the great teams can win easily. That's the other thing. Like, you see a 10 or a 12 or a 13, and people go, wow, that's a lot of points. Well, was it for Pittsburgh?
Right.
I mean, they scored a defensive touchdown and scored a couple other late touchdowns. But, I mean, Aaron Rodgers and the healthy Packers who get Alexander and Bakhtiari and Za'Darius Smith back, they could beat the Niners by 3 scores. They could. It's very possible. So I wouldn't be in too much of a hurry. My point would be this. If Mike lays 6 or laid 6 and it closes 10, Mike beat an NFL playoff market by 4 points through the 7. He's got a great bet. He doesn't have to get too over the top on the other side. Because if Packers win by 17, he's going to be pissed that he even hedged at all.
I think my thing is, too, is like in a situation like that where, you know, say that Green Bay gets out to an early lead, it's 7-0 or, you know, 10-0. All of a sudden, San Francisco's trying to throw their way back into it with Lance. Like, that's just a recipe for a defensive touchdown or something that gets that number up there even more if you're on the Green Bay side of things.
I think it would have been that way anyway.
Yeah, I mean, probably, you're right.
That is an interesting little wrinkle because I mean, that was a consideration, obviously, Garoppolo, but I was ready to take the points with the 49ers. I feel like that would have been the sharp side eventually come Sunday.
It was the sharp side before this stuff came out.
Yeah.
Injuries
and then I saw
the fact everything.
The fact that it creeped up was like this morning I saw it was up to 6. And I was like, that seems odd just on public steam. So
yeah, I played a little 6 myself, laid the points. I mean, the sharp books opened up 4.5, 5. So
yeah, right.
That's respect behind the counter for the dog, knowing full well they're going into Lambeau and taking on the MVP likely and the number one seed. Like, to open that sub 6 in itself is respect. But now that we're at 6 and it's looking like it could be a freight train through 7, these injuries change everything, man. They do. And I'll tell you one more thing. The books respect the hell out of the Buffalo Bills in this spot, making Kansas City a 2-point favorite at home. That's a very telling number. That doesn't mean it's going to happen, that Buffalo is going to cover or win, but you'd probably write good two-way at 2.5, 3. They opened it, like, some books opened it, KC minus 2.
Not to mention, like, KC might be the only place where you can get home field advantage still, too. Like, that's a tough place to play.
That's a lot of respect for the Buffalo side to make them sub 2.5, 3, for sure.
No. I'm interested, even more so. Sam, I don't have anything else for you. Ricky, do you?
No, go make some more phone calls. Yeah. So you can
I just sit here and kick my legs up. I do a lot of days, but not today. By the way, on Check a Dinner this week, we got the guys who finished second in the Circa Million. They won $325,000, but they actually tied for first, the best record. They lost a tiebreaker.
Oh.
So they didn't win the million. They won $325,000. So they're on the show coming up on Wednesday.
Oh. Those poor guys.
Yeah.
It's tough life.
Maybe we can get the $1 million winners for the spread next week.
Thank you, Sam. That's Nesson, betting analyst.
Sam, always a pleasure.
Well, all right. Now we have to make our picks. And I guess that also kind of
Do we? Do we have to?
Yeah, it speaks to the how quickly things can change within the markets and just off of, betting stuff. We'll get into that game a little bit more. But let's start Saturday afternoon in Nashville. I mean, this is just the classic divisional round. This is a wild card round game in the divisional round even. Saturday afternoon, AFC North team versus an NFC South team. You get the Bengals coming off of their win against the Raiders. By the way, sticking with cliches, I got the records wrong. I forgot that we both were on. Wait, did I get them wrong?
No, got them right.
Yeah. Then even more. You got the Bengals coming off their win over the Raiders. They go to Nashville to take on the Titans. This opened at Tennessee -3. I think maybe less than some. No, I think it was 3. But it looks like three quarters of the tickets, a little bit more than half of the money on the Titans. So it's up to 3.5. Like I said, 4:30 kick. Total is 47. Weather doesn't seem to be much of an issue. Derrick Henry might be back for the Titans, who are coming off a bye. All that being said, Ricky, where do you fall on this one?
Yeah, you mentioned last week flushing out the questionable teams, I guess we'll call them. I guess there's a limit to that because there was the Raiders-Bengals matchup. To me, it felt like going into that whatever team won that game was just setting themselves up to get dump trucked in the divisional round. And I still kind of feel that way because, as good as flashy as Cincinnati has been in recent weeks, we've seen it at times this year where they've had those huge letdowns. I do think Tennessee having this bye is going to benefit them. They're going to come in with that offensive line, which they started to get back towards the end of the year. This will be their third straight game getting, having everybody healthy. You mentioned the Derrick Henry return, but also just, having A.J. Brown and Julio Jones back healthy and producing. Like this, it's tough to look at Tennessee's offensive numbers over the second half of the season and deduce much from that. So I'm just kind of going based on the personnel. I do think they're going to be able to run the ball, not just because of Henry's return, but also the injuries along Cincinnati's defensive line. I mean, they came out worse for the wear from that Raiders game. And not to mention, that was sort of a problem to begin with. I mean, you look at from week 13 on, a stretch in which Cincinnati went 3-3, their defense ranked 30th in run success rate. So they were, solid for the entire season for the most part, but definitely showed some cracks down the stretch. If all of a sudden you're going into Tennessee to face a team that can lean on the run, set up the play action, I think this has just been a nice run for the Bengals. It's sort of been a stepping stone sort of season for them, but I could see it all unraveling this week.
Yeah, you could see there's a pretty clear path for this being a close game. The line's 3.5. Tennessee, 12th in weighted DVOA, Cincinnati, 13th. Of the Titans, 7 of their wins came by one score. Average margin of victory was just under 4 in those games. I don't know how good the Titans really are. I think there's better chance than not that they get their heads kicked in next week by either Buffalo or Tennessee. But I'm going to take the Titans.
A favorable little stretch for the Bengals. Like, if they, I guess, could pull this off this week and all of a sudden you're looking at wins over the Raiders and Titans to get the AFC. This is a classic, Patriots tomato
old school Patriots, yeah. I'm going to lay the points, though, with the Titans. The injuries are a big one. It sounds like Larry Ogunjobi, he's out for the season, led the team with 12 tackles for losses, had career-high seven sacks. Mike Daniels is not going to play, I don't think. The big one, defensive end Trey Hendrickson, he's in concussion protocol. Per and Didi Kinkalabala, Cincinnati had a 43.5% pressure rate with him on the field. last week when he got hurt. It went down to 9.1%. They can't generate the pressure. If they're weakened in the middle and they can't generate pressure on the outside, it's going to be a tough day. I like the Titans just in general. I just wonder if they're going to have enough talent next week, but like I wouldn't completely rule it out just because, and this is another thing, is like I just think they're very well coached and they're very tough. I think that you could look at that one score record or whatever and say that's kind of fluky. That'll correct itself. I think they're mentally tough. I think the secondary is, there maybe are some question marks for the Titans, but the pass rush is pretty good. We talked about that last week with Burrow. Like, they haven't done a great job of protecting him. I think the big thing is Mike Vrabel, he basically learned the school of Belichick. It was part of these defensive meetings in New England for years where it's so-and-so is their best player and we're not going to let him beat us. That has to be the Ja'Marr Chase thing this week. Like, I was flabbergasted that Ja'Marr Chase had as good of a game as he had last week against the Raiders. Like, there's one player you can't let beat you, it's Chase, and he had just torched them. I don't expect that to happen this week. You know, you look at only three receivers had more yards on third down than Chase, and no one at least 23rd down receptions had more yards per catch. Like, that is game-changing stuff to pick up big chunks on third down. Can't let that happen. I think they find a way to kind of slow him down, and if that's the case, I just don't see where the Bengals keep pace here.
Yeah, I mean, he keep Cincinnati off the field, too. I mean, that's, the best way to slow down that offense.
That is true.
Tennessee second in average time of possession, so... You know, this is a classic. The Titans just feel like a team that most weeks, the way that they're built, they should be in it. And they should be in it until the end. The coaching thing, like you mentioned.
As long as they stay away from turnovers. Because, like, even...
Well, that's the thing,
You look at, like, the Patriots game, and one sticks out. They end up getting their heads kicked in, but that's just because they fumbled a bunch. Like,
yeah, and
they were playing
five
tough.
Losses at a minus 14 turnover differential. 16 giveaways, 2 forced turnovers. So, yeah, I mean, that's...
I mean, yeah.
You say that for a lot of teams that you got to win the turnover battle, but I think it's especially true with them. But meanwhile, the Bengals, they just feel like, given their reliance on those big plays, that like when they go out, they're going to go out in a blaze of glory. So that's why like I'm comfortable laying the points is like if they don't make those big plays down the field and Tennessee comes
that's
and they run the ball down their throat, like this could turn into a little bit of a run.
Yeah, I think it does. Alrighty, and there's another one too. Like, the Bengals probably travel okay. That's not a far trip, but like, I think the Titans will have some element of home field advantage, which is not always guaranteed in Nashville. So, all right, let's go Saturday night. This one, you know, flipped on its head all of a sudden.
Yeah,
you got the 49ers coming off their, you know, high wire act of a win in Dallas. They go to Green Bay to take on the Packers. The total is at 47.5. This opened at Packers 4.5, which actually felt kind of high in some regards with how I feel about this game. But it's up to 6. Who knows? By the time people listen to this, it could be 10. As we just heard from Sam, there might be question marks about Jimmy Garoppolo's availability. Like I said, I thought it was weird that on Monday, Kyle Shanahan was like, yeah, he's dealing with a shoulder injury. Like, that just doesn't seem like information that you should be looking to disseminate this time of year. So maybe that kind of tips their hand where that's headed. On the other side, the Packers, hopefully they're going to get Jair Alexander back. Za'Darius Smith, also a possibility. Packers are as healthy as they've been all year. They're coming off of the bye. This feels, especially if Jimmy can't go, like a Packers route, but I'm not entirely sure. I guess for the sake of this argument, we'll go off the 6 that we have with the information we have.
Yeah, and I'm rushing to take that 6 right now.
Wow.
To lay the points with Green Bay.
Yeah,
because
of course.
My thing is, and you mentioned this in our conversation with Sam, that like the questions about the injuries on the defensive side are just as much of a current concern, if not more so, than the Garoppolo injury.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Having...
It doesn't sound like... It sounds like those guys are going to play. I don't know how they can be confident about Bosa with a concussion. But
well, that's why I think Fred Warner will probably
try
play because, he was in there at the end of last week's game, albeit hobbling around. Bosa, with a concussion, it's, like, impossible to predict.
That's what the earlier report was, like, they're optimistic. It's like, how...
how's your brain feel?
Yeah.
Like, great.
By the way, just rap sheet. said Fred Warner will play on Sunday. He was on McAfee today. Say shoulder and torn thumb or something to watch heading in this weekend with Garoppolo. So that's already like
it's,
feels like he
the
knows
seeds
are
being planted.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it's it doesn't Sorry, seem to be trending in a good direction. Which is weird because like. Like on the look ahead, like last week I said, well, whoever San Fran plays is probably they're going to pose serious problems for him, and especially a team like Green Bay, given you know their knack for giving up yards on the ground. Like it just in general, everybody healthy, like it's kind of a bad matchup for Green Bay. But at the same time, I can't overlook the injuries on the defensive side, especially if Bosa can't go and you can't generate that pass rush, because I do think the 49ers defense is somewhat vulnerable on the back end. Their secondary isn't what it was, you know, 2 years ago when they made that Super Bowl run. Look at them, 23rd in dropback EPA and 16th in pass DVOA. But one thing of note, 49ers defense, 31st in pass DVOA against number one receivers.
Saw that stat. By the way, this is...
Now you're welcoming the best receiver in football.
Rematch of week three, a game that the Packers won at the gun with a field goal. That game is in California. Davante Adams, 18 targets, 12 catches, 132 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah.
So that didn't help those numbers.
Even going back to last season, the matchup in the regular season last year, 12 targets, 10 catches, 173 yards and a touchdown. Yeah, so the last two times you faced Davante Adams, he's feasted.
Which is like going back to the Ja'Marr Chase thing. Like at a certain point, maybe short of like doubling a guy with brackets, like I don't know what you do to slow him down.
Yeah.
That's a tough spot.
Yeah. The injuries coupled with the track record of not having success against a guy like that. You mentioned the returns for the Packers or hopeful returns on the defensive side. David Bakhtiari being back in week 18. So you got him along that offensive line. It's just everything seems to be trending towards Green Bay at this point from an injury news standpoint. That's enough for me to run to the window.
Yeah, I guess
before this line gets any higher.
I guess since I technically already have this in pocket, I got to take the Packers here. But I was at six with even a banged up Garoppolo. I would have been very tempted to take the 49ers because you look at what they can do on the ground. I was looking at some of the Sharp Football Stats stuff. 49ers running at and off left tackle, average 6.1 yards per carry with 18 explosive runs. On the flip side, the Packers defending those runs to the left tackle and to the outside, they were allowing 5.25 yards per carry and 18 runs of 10 yards or more, a 60% success rate on the offensive side against them. That would have been a huge issue for them, slowing down. Like the Deebo Samuel thing, I could have just seen the Deebo Samuel end around for 13 yards being run this like six times, just back-breaking stuff. I'm very curious as to how much they can do if Garoppolo can't go. But even then, I guess like the tiebreaker has to be the defense, to your point. And you know, you look at, they don't blitz a ton, but like Rodgers still is pretty good when he doesn't have, when he's not facing the blitz. Rodgers against five defensive backs was the best in the league. Nobody plays more, or few teams play more nickel than the 49. You got to be pretty precise, and the Packers haven't been precise in the playoffs going up against that rushing attack. But I think like, you know, when you start factoring in the Garoppolo thing too, I'm just fascinated to see how the Packers build a game plan where it's like, we're going to try and make Trey Lance beat us. So now it feels like very much Kaepernick-y.
If the Packers bow out in this game.
Yeah, I know.
Especially if
I know.
All that's going on surrounding this game now, that's going to be a tough look.
Yep.
They've got to come in.
They're kind of damned if they do, damned if they don't, though. Because like, it's going to be the narrative is going to be just red carpets being rolled out to the Super Bowl for the Packers. Like, of course that they got there, which yeah. It kind of is, but I mean, whatever.
I feel like everybody's sort of been on the Packers, though, ahead of the postseason. Like, they're...
Yeah, no, I know. But, like, if they get there, it's...
Yeah, looking back, yeah.
A lot of people holding, like, 49ers futures on, like, the gambling Twitter and, like, podcast scene that I've been listening to. So, I think there's a lot of people rooting in that regard, too.
Yeah.
I think that's another thing I meant to ask Sam about.
I think he might be among.
Yeah, I was going to ask him like how holding like tickets, futures tickets, affects your your outlook on things, but we'll get to that later. Once the 49ers probably upset them and ruin my life. Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. kick. Got the Bucks at home coming off their blowout win over the Eagles. They're going to host the Rams. Rams coming off their Monday night blowout win of the Cardinals. This opened at 3, went down to 2.5, and is back up to 3 in favor of the Bucks. Total's 48.5. I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of that. Who do you like here?
Again, injuries coming out of this past week. I think maybe that is the big sort of takeaway from Wild Card Weekend, aside from the lopsided nature of a lot of the games, yep. is there were some significant injuries for the teams that did move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, in this case, I'm talking about the Bucks offensive line, with Tristan Wirfs, his status being unclear. Ryan Jensen his status unclear. That's two All Pro offensive linemen, and really that's been the backbone of that team. Amidst the drama and amidst losing some of their offensive weapons, like that has been the one thing they've been able to rely on. And all of a sudden, you're going to take away or potentially take away that continuity. Like even if they do go, they're you got to assume they're going to be banged up ahead of a matchup against Aaron Donald and company. Like it's just you almost feel like, is this the one sort of dagger that is too difficult for the Buccaneers to overcome? Because I mean, you start taking pieces away from the offensive line. You start talking about communication when they're already sort of overcoming other deficiencies on offense. And you just wonder how much can Tom Brady make up for? Like, to me, this feels like a little bit of a death blow if they're not able to have those guys in there fully healthy and have that functioning offensive line, because they're just, they're sort of been piecing together, piecing things together, have that patchwork offense to this point. So that scares me. I know it's... Sam's going to tell me I'm crazy for just taking the points in a matchup between Matthew Stafford and Tom Brady. And,
put it that way.
In banking on the Rams to potentially come out on top in Tampa Bay. But I don't know. This Bucs team, still as good as they look defensively against the Eagles, you still got to take that with a grain of salt considering the level of competition. So for me, I'm going to take the points with the Rams.
I will walk that plank with you.
Good. I need somebody to... hold my hand.
I like this even independent of the offensive line injuries. Because I just look at it and it's like, I was ready. This has been my thing for like the last few weeks. I was ready to jump at my first opportunity to go against the Bucks, and here it is, because especially when you start factoring those injuries. You get the Aaron Donald factor. And the Rams, by the way, I think a lot we make of the pass rush. Their pass rush wasn't great this year. I mean, they were 27th in pressure rate and 19th and 18th in pressure per game. In one game, though, when you're banged up on the offensive line, I'll take my chances with Aaron Donald being a game wrecker. I think they have the scheme and the talent to be able to maybe try to run the ball against the Bucs defense, and if they can't, then they are well-positioned, Matthew Stafford's relative ineptitude aside, of taking advantage of a Bucs secondary that even last week gave up some big plays to the Eagles. Some of it was garbage time, sure. But, I mean, you go back to these two teams played week 3, like Cooper Kupp went off. I guess this was kind of a quiet week for him, judging based on what he did this season. But 9 catches on 12 targets for 96 yards, a couple of touchdowns. Stafford threw the ball 38 times for 343 touchdowns, 343 yards and 4 touchdowns. Sean Jackson had that big play. I mean, he's gone now, but whatever. So I look at that and say, that's they're worse off now defensively than they were back then. Nobody blitzes more than the Bucks do. They led the league in blitz rate. Stafford versus the blitz, according to Sport Radar. Only Jimmy Garoppolo had a higher passer rating than Stafford did, and only 5 QBs had a lower miscue rate against the blitz. His 1.9% turnover-worthy play rate per Pro Football Focus is among the best in the league. Also, consider this. Bucks defensive coordinator Todd Bowles is going to interview with the Vikings on Friday and then the Bears on Saturday and then go coach on Sunday. That's, I don't know.
At some point, like, you need to sleep.
Right.
To fully function.
Yeah.
Your job.
And like, so if you're, it's just, there's not enough time.
Like,
in the
you're
day.
Not
there's,
a robot. Like,
there are, well, it's just a finite amount of hours.
Yeah.
So that's not great. You know, that week three game, by the way, Brady was the leading rusher for the Bucs, which is nuts. The Bucs ran for 35 yards on 13 carries. And then, you know, per sport radar, again, this is the least amount of play action the Bucs used all season. They like to use the play action. Brady had 118 pass rating on the play fake this year. Rams have done a really good job of eliminating play action big plays this year too. So I don't know. Like, again, Sunday's going to roll around and be like, why did we go against Tom Brady versus Matthew Stafford? But I do think the Rams are uniquely positioned to give the Bucs a whole lot of hell on Sunday.
Yeah, I think they can run with them offensively too. Like, that's the thing. If this turns into a little bit of a shootout, I think the Rams are equipped to play that
game.
The
one thing that gets in the Rams' way is, maybe not the one, but the biggest thing is Stafford just becoming a puddle.
Yeah. Yeah, they can bottom out at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, I'm trying not to overreact to Monday night, but I do, like I said, like, they've got a great stable of receivers. You know,
Cam Akers looked awesome.
Yeah, right. That's not,
He showed some serious burst, more so than I was expecting.
I mean, that's maybe a Super Bowl future to look at, because
Green
Bay, like, I could see them running all over the Packers too. So,
and the Odell Beckham addition has worked out better than I anticipated.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's been a nice pickup.
It's another, yeah, exactly. It's another guy who's more than established. So, all right, let's round out the weekend with arguably the best game on the slate. You got the Bills going to the Chiefs. This is a rematch of the AFC Championship from a year ago. A rematch of their Week 5 showdown. You know, Sam mentioned this too. I mean, it's open KC 2.5. Some places it's down to 2. DraftKings Sportsbook, where we use our numbers for the spread. Total's 55, by far the highest of the weekend. Public's pretty much split on this one. This is a tough one. Who you got?
I'm back in the Bills. Been sort of on them.
We're simpatico this weekend.
Been sort of on them for a while. You got to ride them. Got to ride them all the way. I'm going to get a couple of points here. I look at that, what they're able to do offensively, and the fact that they've started to run the ball a little bit too.
Yeah.
Like, they've developed the running game, I think could be huge in a matchup like this, where, I mean, you've seen in the past, I mean, dating back several seasons now, that you can beat the Chiefs on the ground. So if they're able to do some of that, Josh Allen with his legs is a huge weapon. And then maybe that sets up some of the what you're able to do off of play action. All 5 of Josh Allen's touchdown passes against the Patriots were on play action. The Chiefs this season have allowed opponents to pass for 1,545 yards off of play action, 3rd most in the NFL.
Love it.
That along with an 80.2 QBR, best in the NFL. So there's a chance there that if Buffalo is able to come out, run the ball a little bit, turn to the play action, maybe they can make those big plays down the field. And then on the other side of the ball, I mean, we saw it in the first meeting where I think Buffalo had like 4 takeaways. They basically sat, you know, 2 safeties high the entire game, forced the Chiefs to sort of carve them up a little bit rather than, you know, rely on the big play. And if they're able to do that again, I mean, I think that that's sort of the path to slowing down that offense, which, even though the numbers have suggest that they are what they've been in the past, they still haven't quite looked that way. Like, I look at even like the last week's game against Pittsburgh, and like early in that game, there was a lot of, like, the Steelers had chances. Like, they were getting the ball back, they were stopping them, they're getting the ball back, and they just couldn't score.
Yeah.
And you do that with Buffalo, you're opening a can of worms, because I think Buffalo's going to be able to take advantage of those opportunities.
Yeah, I think we've been talking all year. It's like, well, what, you know, the Chiefs eventually are going to get there. Maybe they turn it on in the playoffs. They're going to get to their ceiling. And, like, I'm thinking about it after watching what I saw on Saturday night. Buffalo's ceiling might be higher than the Chiefs.
If it's at least what the Chiefs is, right? Like, they're on such an even playing field.
Just because I haven't seen them do it as much, I'm less likely to believe that they're going to consistently get there. But I think they can do it in Kansas City. They have all the confidence in the world after just beating the pants off the Patriots. They went in there earlier in the year and they beat the pants off the Chiefs. Like, they've got a revenge factor here in terms of trying to knock out the Chiefs after losing last year in the conference championship. Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to add after what you said. Like, they kind of were the first to really solve that, you know, Patrick Mahomes riddle with the 2 high safeties and the zone and all that stuff. And I think Mahomes has done well, and that staff has done well to kind of adjust as the season goes on, but it just hasn't been the same. And that, you know, you want to make them go slow, methodical drives and take away that big play and know that you have a chance to break one. The second you get the ball back, the Bills have to feel good about that. And I am, you know, we saw some good things from the Chiefs defense as the season went on, but they've allowed 28 points to the Chargers and the Bengals since their bye. They lost that game to the Bengals, but those have been the only two offenses they faced, especially if you want to rule out the Raiders just because what they do to the Raiders. But like, they played Denver twice, Pittsburgh twice, and Vegas, plus, like I said, those Chargers and Bengals games, which they got torched for, you know, 4 or 5 touchdowns. So, I don't know.
Comparable ceilings, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
The difference being Buffalo's floor much lower than Kansas City's.
Yeah.
But nobody said this was going to be easy, Mike.
No, that's true. The narratives, too, like, I could see us reconvening, you know, for the Super Bowl, or you can see the talking heads in 2 weeks with the Bills there and being like, is this, you know, is Josh Allen taking over Mahomes using this game as, like, the leaping off point? Just because, I mean, the stat line he put up last week against the Patriots was absurd. And, like, he's just one more game away from really get his hype train getting out of the way. So
I think the simplest way for me to look at this is offensively, they're neck and neck. Defensively, I would say Buffalo, from a personnel standpoint, has a pretty significant advantage. Like, as good as Kansas City looked down the stretch and, like, their, you know, how impressive their defensive turnaround was, I'm taking the Bills defense over the Chiefs defense.
Yeah.
Every day of the week.
It's not even close. Yeah.
So
I could see
a really simplistic way of looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, the Chiefs have run the ball pretty well recently. Maybe I don't know. Maybe the Bills just dare them to run it and they have a nice day doing it. And they find, I mean, the Chiefs roll them, it would not be the most surprising thing in the world. I mean, that's still a legitimate outfit over there. But yeah, I think it's the Bills' time.
I do too.
We are 4-for-4 with being on the same page this week. So that's
wild. It worked out last week, though.
It did, actually.
We were, you know, we were in lockstep.
Good point. We had a good week. All right. That's Ricky. I'm Mike. This has been the Spread and Essence Football Picks podcast. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next week. Goodbye.